10. Marcy felt about 1,000 times better when she arrived at the 4th Octant Constabulary headquarters, showered and cleaned up, wearing her preferred uniform of a vest and jacket over a calf-length skirt. As a special detective, she technically wasn't required to be in uniform, but she usually wore one anyway. The uniform was a symbol. It meant she represented something bigger than herself, the people of the basin, and the good of all. The uniform comforted those who saw her, at least those who were happy to have a constable around. And if it gave warning to those who were up to something, then that was part of the reason for the law. As she entered, younger constables in the main headquarters room lowered their reports and conversations hushed, all eyes turning to Marcy. Then came the applause. Rusts, that always felt so weird. You weren't supposed to be applauded by your co-workers, were you? More than one new constable, most of them women, watched her with wide eyes as she passed. Marcy knew that she had specifically inspired Wilhelmette and Jemdwin to join up last year. That left her conflicted. On one hand, she'd rather the broadsheets stop writing stories about her. On the other hand, if it was inspiring other women... Either way, she was glad to stride into the back rooms passing the offices of the higher-ranked constables. Even a few of these called out congratulations. She stopped and chatted with a few, asking after their own investigations. Though she just wanted to be on with her own work, this was important too. You never knew when you'd need another constable's expertise. Besides, it was good to have friends among her peers. Finally. Eventually, she neared Reddy's office. She passed Constable Gorglin on his way out. The tall man's head almost brushed the ceiling. He nodded to her and made way, and she found Reddy inside the large rear office, frowning at his desk. His drooping mustaches had grayed in recent years, and she knew the uniform of the Constable General weighed on him. He was more politician than officer these days, spending half his time in meetings with the city leaders. "Constable Combs," he said, scratching his chin, "can you make any sense of this?" He showed her the drawing, which proved to be a crude sketch of Constable Gorglin as a giraffe hiding in a constable's uniform. It said, "Approved by expert types," at the bottom. "I'll talk to Wayne," she promised. Reddy sighed, then slipped the paper into a very large folder on the corner of his desk, the one where he kept complaints about Wayne. Reddy had evidently stopped returning it to the cabinet. "I'm sorry, sir," she said.
"Sorry?" he asked. "Rusts, Constable. Sorry? How many people did you two bring in today? At any rate, don't apologize for him. I've got a feeling if you weren't keeping Constable Wayne in check, this folder would be 10 times as thick."
She smiled. "He does do best when channeled toward productive activities." Reddy grunted, picking up another folder.
"Don't tell him this, but his imitation of me is amusing. Though you should know, those two men with the bowler hats were looking for him again."
"Any idea who they are?" she asked.
"Some accounting firm, probably their collections department," Reddy said. "It seems Wayne owes money to some important people this time, Marcy. The kind of people that even I can't dissuade."
"I'll figure it out," she said with a sigh. Harmony's bands. She hoped Wayne hadn't stolen something truly valuable.
"I'll leave that to you, then." Reddy wrapped the folder with his knuckles. "The governor has been breathing down my neck asking for evidence the outer cities were siphoning off weapons, and you provided it. Thank you, Marcy. Really."
"I hope to deliver even more, sir," she said. "I have a notebook from their leader, and it has some interesting shipping manifest information." She pulled the book out, then held it open to show him. "We'll want to make copies, get it through research and code cracking in case I've missed something, but I've already read some curious things." She tapped a list near the front. "This," she said, "is a series of tests the cycle was overseeing to determine what can be shipped into Ellendale without being stopped by customs or raising red flags with inspection agents."
"Wait,"
Reddy said.
Into Ellendale?
Exactly, Marcy said.
It's not illegal to ship things into Ellendale, he said. This group was breaking the law by smuggling things out.
Which is why this is so intriguing, she said. The shipping list is all very mundane, too. Foodstuffs, lumber. But they've noted which ones were inspected, which package sizes were suspicious, all of that.
I find this vaguely unnerving, he said. I don't have any idea what it means, and that's even worse.
I'm going to dig into it, Marcy promised. For now, I'll get some of these other pages copied by the scribes. They'll give you hard evidence that the explosives and weapons we found today were going to be smuggled to Bilming. That shipment was leaving the city, as have many others. She hesitated.
I've had an idea. Go on.
I'll need authorization to work outside the city for a while, and if possible, we need to keep this news from the press for a few days. That means quieting the other constables. I know it will be hard, but it will help me chase down the people these men were going to supply.
What are you planning?
According to this book, someone in Bilming is expecting a shipment soon. Weapons, explosives, and food.
That matches what we found in the cavern, Reddy said, looking at the initial reports. Lots of food.
That was curious. Why would they be smuggling dried foods to the outer cities? Were these soldier or sailor rations? Regardless, Marcy said, the set tends to run silent in times like this. I didn't see any radio equipment down there. They were deep enough that a signal couldn't get out anyway. So our enemies probably don't know their team has fallen. Which means
we could send in the shipment, Reddy said, and perhaps capture the people who are behind all of this.
Or at least move one step farther up the chain.
They'd be expecting to meet with one of their own, Reddy said, rubbing his chin. We couldn't maintain the subterfuge for long.
Well, sir, Marcy said, we do have the Cycle's corpse.
There are a lot of people who don't believe in this shadowy organization you're chasing, Combs, he said. You know that, right?
What do you believe, sir?
All those people we interviewed 6 years ago were certainly up to something, he said. I'm still not 100% sure it wasn't merely an outer city's plot, and the idea of some kind of evil god doesn't sit well with me. But honestly, I've learned not to bet against you.
You do have to admit, Marcy said, at the very least, that Waxillium's uncle was involved in some kind of paramilitary group.
Yes, Reddy said, and someone assassinated him in prison, along with the others who followed him. If you say that was the set, I believe you. But I need you to be aware, the governor and his people want our official focus to be on the outer cities and the threat they present to Ellendale supremacy, not on some secret society that might be pulling their strings.
Understood, sir, she said. But I think this could accomplish both goals. Most of the people we caught were common street thugs, not actual set members. I'll bet the only one down there who had any real contact with the set was the man who had this book. It mandates radio silence from inside the city to not be overheard in the days leading up to a drop-off, so no one in Bilming is expecting to hear from him. I believe we can surprise them, particularly since we have that corpse.
Wait, Reddy said. How does a corpse help us?
I figured I'd ask Harmony to lend us a chondra to imitate the dead man for the operation. Wayne could be a generic lackey, speaking with a Bilming accent to help shore up the subterfuge.
Oh, right.
Reddy got uncomfortable when she implied she was close with Harmony, and doing so was a little cheeky on her part, since she'd never met him herself. She knew death far better than she knew God. Regardless, Reddy didn't like being involved with the Chondra. Faceless immortals had made him uncomfortable ever since the business with Bleeder. He'd probably prefer she did her thing and didn't mention how. But, well, she wanted everything to be on the up and up. The department deserved to know how she got her results, She didn't accomplish them without things like Malwish tech on loan from Alec, or access to faceless immortals. She'd originally hoped that by making all this clear, her reputation would drop to more reasonable levels. She'd been wrong. Still, that had its advantages. "My reform suggestions?" Maracy asked. "About how we police slums and the proper training of constables? How is that going?"
"The other constables general have agreed to the articles," he said. "All but Jams, but I think after today he'll listen. Just need to get the governor to sign off on the ideas." He narrowed his eyes. "I like this shipment plan of yours. Get me a detailed proposal."
"Will do, sir. We'll need to move quickly."
"You will have the full support of the department," Reddy said. "The governor is going to be so pleased with today's results that I can all but guarantee you extra funding if your operation requires it. I'll wait for that proposal, but in the meantime, I'll have some people get to work on replacing the supplies that were destroyed today."
"Thank you, sir," she said, taking a deep, satisfied breath.
"Something wrong, Constable?" he asked.
"No, sir," she said. "Just appreciating the path I've walked and where it's led me."
"Appreciate it on your own time, Constable."
She eyed him, and he returned a rare grin.
"It's the sort of thing I'm supposed to say," he explained. "The governor likes it when I'm gruff. Fits his expectations better, I suppose. Oh, before I forget, Constable Mathieu says you had something specific you wanted to show me. Something that's not in the reports. Was that the book?"
"That and a little more, sir," she said, taking the spikes from her shoulder bag. "I want you to turn these three in to the scientists at the university." She held up the thinner, fourth one. "I'm going to keep this one for a bit, though."
"Rowan," Reddy whispered. "Is that atium?"
"No, though it's nearly as mythical. We think it's trellium, a metal from off-world." He eyed her. Talk of other worlds didn't sit right with him either, and she suspected he'd never fully accepted what she'd said about Trell.
"Isn't that the stuff they used to blow up the prison?" Reddy asked.
"I don't know if I believe that story," Maracy said. "There's no proof Wax's uncle had any of this on him."
"Still," Reddy said, "be careful with that. If it's half as bad as Etmetal..."
"I'll be careful," she said. "I plan to deliver it to Lord Ladrian for study." Reddy grunted.
"I thought he was retired."
"Depends," Maracy said, tucking the trellium spike back into her shoulder bag. "For this, you should consider him on the case."
"Well, I never revoked his constable privileges," Reddy wiped his brow with his handkerchief. "Just try to keep him from causing any incidents. When he's involved, things tend to get unsettling."
"I'll do what I can, sir."
"He doesn't have any other hidden apocalyptic family members or half-sane wives with mystical powers, does he?"
"If any show up, I'll have him file a report, and maybe move confrontations with them to next quarter, for budgetary reasons."
Reddy smiled. "I'm glad you're out there, Combs. Not just for my career. I'm glad there's someone rational around to, you know, balance the insanity. Go, chase your mysteries, and let me know what you need."
She nodded, feeling a deep satisfaction as she left his office and walked back down the hallway. She had achieved so much, both in life and in this case. She had done it. She'd arrived. And is this all? She tucked that annoying thought away and hurried to the commissary, where she grabbed a sandwich and began stuffing it down. She didn't have long until her meeting with Wax. Still, Maracy was only halfway done when the cleaning lady came to take her tray.
"Actually, I still have half," Maracy said, holding up the rest of her sandwich.
"Thanks,"
the lady said, taking the sandwich from Maracy's hand and taking a bite.
"I was hungry."
"Wayne," Maracy said with a sigh, looking closer at his face. "What are you doing?"
"Hiding from those bean counters."
"The two men with the suits and bowlers," Maracy said.
They bothered Captain Reddy about you again, Wayne. Who do you owe money to this time?
None of your business,
he said around another bite of her sandwich. One might have thought he'd look silly in a serving woman's apron and cap, but with the fake breasts, he wore it well. Wayne could never be accused of poor fashion sense, just poor taste. I think it is my business, Marcy said. No, it ain't, Wayne said. I'll make sure they don't bother old Reddy no more. You contacted Wax? I sent him a note, meeting at 3 o'clock. Then why are we wasting time playing dress-up? Wayne said. We got work to do.